session number 17629, Mr. David Ridley, reel 17.
Mr. Ridley, reel 17. What date did you leave Italy for Greece?
Well, it was approximately late 45. After a long train journey from Milan right down to Taranto, I finally caught a battalion up in Taranto. They were on the way to Greece. And then I joined the battalion, took over my company, and the only person I knew in the company was a company stone. All of the whole lot had been released, and all I had was a brand new lot of, well, we all young men, all raw recruits, right?
You said that these were national servicemen coming in at the end of war. Were they easy to handle, being civilians?
Yes, they were quite good. They did what they were told, more or less. But my first encounter with them was I prayed them the first meal morning and inspecting them, and when I looked at the rifles, good grief, I've never seen anything like it in all my life.
We've got this about the rusty rifles.
I'll put that down there. They were quite good chaps, and the only, I don't think it was written, I won the competition in Italy, I think it was, with them. We had a battalion drill competition, and I won a drill competition with them. Whether that was in Italy or Greece, I'm not sure. Anyway, we moved from Taranto to Salonika, that's where we landed, and we put into a tobacco storage place. I think it belonged to the Americans, actually. There was quite a lot of Americans in that area at one time. And that was the main industry, you know, growing tobacco and exporting it. We no sooner got in to this building, got our beds all laid out and all that, and we had to pack up. We were detailed to escort the train with all the regimental equipment, you know, quartermaster stores and everything, I got it. And we got on this train, I don't think I had any light in all my life. Apart from there was nowhere to put them in, we had to, you know, move the baggage apart so we could push two men into each, you know, baggage truck. And my little crowd was, we were in the tender behind the engine. And I don't know if you've been to Greece, but it's very hilly and mountainous, you know. And you used to go flying down one side of the mountain, everybody hanging out, no proper brakes. These chaps were hanging out, pulling strings to put brakes on. And halfway down the mountain, they would let go of the string so that the engine could carry speed and momentum to get up the next hillside. And then every now and again we had to stop because the bearings on the engine, or one of the wheels on the engine, was just, they were just being stripped apart. Anyway, we finally landed in Xanthi, and we were put in, after unloading and the rest of the battalion coming up, we were put into Greek barracks. And their barracks there was just one long building, and you entered by the centre. And on the right you had a big barrack room, and on the left you had a barrack room. And upstairs in the foyer, so there was a little room upstairs where the sergeants, or I don't know, probably either the sergeants or officers in them did, but we, the sergeants, used to sleep up there. One funny thing that I'll bring to your attention here. We all had bed boards for beds, which it was only lifted about 4 inches off the ground. And on the fact the space was very narrow, most of the equipment was either at the head of your bed or at the foot of the bed. So naturally, when you undress to go to bed at night, you put your boots at the bottom of the bed. So one night, I thought the Greeks were our friends, but their local robbers came in and took everybody's boots, the whole company's boots. And there was Flanagan jumping up and down because he had to supply Air Company with all new boots. That was one interesting thing there. Another one was we built a range in Zante, a rifle range, about 300 yards in length. We built that for them and we used it. And we just did various training, not a great lot of army training. And we got on quite well with the Greeks because most of them could speak English. Because this particular Xanthi is on the entrance of a massive valley. It's shaped like a horseshoe. And that's where they used to grow the tobacco. Of course, when the world came, the tobacco business just went up the creek because it was run by Americans. But there was quite a lot of game there. And these people that we got to know, like the local villagers, they said, well, if you can get with some ammunition, we can supply you with shotguns and we go shooting. So we, through the PRI, we got a lot of 12 bore cartridges. They supplied the weapons and we supplied the transport, and off we went. We used to go shooting with them. They shoot wild boar and things like that. That was quite, you know, interesting. And then we had our regimental dances, and we invited all the dignity from there. And I was released from Xanthi.
What were you doing in Greece? Why had you been sent?
I had no idea, but I think it was just to guard the borders, because we were right up on the Bulgarian border. And apparently, according to the Greeks in Xanthi, the Bulgarians were very, you know, not very nice to them. They took all the possessions of them that was anywhere valuable. And I think that's one of the reasons why we were there.
You weren't part of the civil war that broke out in Greece between the communist element
No, all that was finished. I think our 16th Battalion was involved in that, like. I can't say a great lot about that because after a period of time, my release number came up. I was number 28, and I was sent for by the CEO, and he offered me all sorts. He offered me RSM if I would only stop. And in fact, on me releasing, he says, "Men like you, sir, we can ill afford to lose them." If I hadn't had a month's leave in Italy, from Italy to the England, I think I might have signed on. I might have stopped. But it was that month's leave that sort of spoiled it for me. Even when I was released, I was about 4 year work and already had a family. I had twin boys. I got right up to here, you know, fed up with the life, and I even went to join the army again. But fortunately, I don't know which when the recruiting office in Durham was closed. And in fact, I stopped and asked the policeman where the recruiting office was. He says, "Oh, just up the road." He says, "What are you going there for?" I said, "I'm going to join the army." He says, "You must be out of your mind." But when war was finished, the army was quite a nice place to be. You know, you enjoyed yourself, and apart from your military duties, so you had quite a lot of time to relax and things like that.
Was the accommodation quite comfortable in Greece?
No, it was only this barracks, and as I said, it was one long hut. It was nothing elaborate.
Were the problems keeping the battalion interested and alert?
Yes, well, you always had that problem. You always had to have, you know, something going on. As I said, that was one of the reasons why the CEO decided to build a range so that we could, you know, I mean, everybody likes to go and shoot. used to go on the range and shoot. We had drill competitions and all sorts going on. We used to do, as I say, we had this shooting with the local civvies, you know, going to shooting game. And then we did quite a lot of mountain climbing. It was because of the very high mountains around Xanthi. In fact, it used to take about 2 hours to go up one of them, and that was one of the small ones. Not that I've participated in that very much.
And you said that by and large you got on very well with the Greeks themselves.
We did, yes, we've got on very well. In fact, there was one family had two daughters, and I think they married British soldiers.
With the war over, and of course your own long years in the battalion, was there any resentment, the fact that you, instead of getting nearer to England at the end of the war, you were being pushed farther away in Greece?
Well,
men like yourself that had served.
It
right
wasn't
through.
Resentment, it was just more or less amazed that I was going for. It was only, it wasn't resentment, but my friend, I've mentioned this chap before, Tudor David, one of the nicest fellows I've ever met, a Welshman. And he was about 25 group. Now, when it came out that the war in the East was in the Middle East was finished, he was all. I think the government made a statement that all up to 25 group would be released. The rest would have to go to the Far East to fight the Japanese. And I was doing nothing about this thing, but it didn't happen. Because they dropped the atomic bomb, whatever, what that was. And there was, I said, what the devil's an atomic bomb? But that finished the Japanese.
How was the groupings arranged? Was it in accordance with the date you joined, or the amount of time you spent abroad?
The length of service you had.
So the longer the service, then the smaller your number.
It wasn't where you'd been or what service you'd done. It was just the time that you joined. As far as I know, like.
Had you been promoted to Sergeant Major by this time?
Oh, yes, I am. I came home. I was promoted to Sergeant Major in Italy. There's a large town just outside of Trieste. What the devil do you call that? We were stationed there anyway. And people were getting released. And the senior ranks, they were quite a lot older than I was, and they were getting released right, left and centre. In fact, one remark from Major Flanagan, that was the quartermaster, he says to me one day, he says, "You ain't properly dressed." I says, "Give us a chance." I said, "I'm not time to get me crowned. I haven't had time to come to the quartermaster's to draw me crown." Now, that was when I was a colour sergeant at the time, and I was getting promoted to sergeant major. But I was promoted from sergeant to sergeant major in within months, a couple of months, 3 months at the most, because the people were getting released.
What are the duties of a sergeant major?
Well, he was the disciplinarian first of all. He had to see that the company ran according to rules and regulations. His first job in the morning was ensure that the company was roused out of bed, and after breakfast he used to take company office, which was anybody who had interviews with the company commander, anyone that was on charges, or that was all done after breakfast. And after that, it all depended on the training program. If it was like a route march or something like that, my duty more or less was finished. I just used to wander around the camp, just seeing things was all right. You had to be strict in a sense, but you had to be fair. You had to treat men like men, not just boys. Now and again, he had to jump on various people because, used to think that they could do what they wanted. And while I was Sergeant Major at this Gritchia, that's the name of this place, while I was, it was a big spa place, you know, something like Leamington Spa. And I had a good, massive big spa building, and that's where we were building in this place. While I was there, the RSM broke his ankle, and he had to go to the hospital. So I had to take over RSM, which entails doubling up on what a Sergeant Major does. He did interviews for to see the CEO, charges, people being charged to see the CEO. He had to ensure that the guards were paraded and inspected, make sure we were all dressed correctly, and, you know, the old bull. And from there, on the fact that we're in an Indian brigade, nearly all the Indians had been sent home. And their, a lot of their duties was gone DID dumps. And we had to take over all those duties. In fact, it was just one big massive guard that we had to do. And of course, as a sergeant major and RSM, you had to make sure that those guards were sent out and relieved at the correct times. You had to go out and visit them. And I mean, there was quite a lot of equipment, you know, being left. When an army just up sticks and goes home, there's quite a lot of equipment left to be looked after. And if you didn't look after it, it just disappears.
I was going to ask you, was there much thievery? Was there a lot of stealing going on?
Yes, yeah, it had to be on your toes all the time. In fact, we used to borrow the quartermaster's jeep once, you know, to go various places. And it was a brand new one. And quite a lot of time while he was a sergeant major, you used to get circulars coming through that a chassis of a jeep had been found so-and-so, you know, with numbers on. Did it belong to us and all this? Because a jeep engine and a jeep wheels used to fit a Fiat car. So, and one funny story about this, this American parked his jeep outside of a cafe, went in for tea or coffee, whatever it was, and he put a great big thick chain through the steering wheel, you know, so nobody could steal it. And when he come up, was up on bricks and all the wheels had disappeared. Well, that's a fact, that. But this particular jeep that we had was a brand new one, the quartermaster had. Well, by that time, my friend was regimental quartermaster sergeant, see, and I was the sergeant, and we still knocked about together. And he borrowed this jeep, and we went out this day, and this particular farmer, he says, I'll buy the jeep off you. He says, you must be kidding, you know, we can't do that. And he thought that the reason why we didn't want to sell it was because it was brand new. He said, well, run up against the wall, and he said, I'll buy what's left. But you just couldn't do things like that.
Had rations and food improved after the war was over and you were in this peacetime situation?
Well, we were allowed, what I did when I was a colour sergeant, I used to run my own canteen. And you used to go out and buy wine, and we used to get an issue of beer and whiskey and everything. And we had a canteen, see? And we used to make a small profit off that. And the small profit of that, I used to go down to the local market, and I used to buy, you know, food, like a salad or something like that, which you very rarely get in the army. I used to go and buy lettuce and tomatoes and things like that and put a salad on for them. That's the way we used to supplement it. But I could have no complaints about army food. I think we were fed a sight better than a lot of civilians. By that time, you had the local groups, you know, the various denominations, like, you know, I don't know whether they've got the same as us, Labour parties and things like that, but they had you were getting these particular groups used to meet, you know, and have sort of like speakers' corners. But we never interfered with anything like that, and they never give us any trouble. The only trouble I ever saw was in with civilians was in Trieste when I was in Greece, was because the Yugoslavs wanted Trieste back, and the Italians wouldn't give them it, and it didn't move from there. The Italians still have got Trieste. And when I was released, when I finally decided, I said, "Oh, I'm going to go home." Like, we were travelled on a 3-ton truck. See, when we went up to Zanthi, we went by train, but coming back, we had to come on by truck.
What date was this?
It was late 1946, later than that. And coming down, the roads had been so neglected, they were all potholes. And believe me, it was a terrible journey. We travelled all day, you know, because it was quite a few miles from the Bulgarian border right down to Thessalonica. And the journey, well, it was terrible. Just because the road was all potholes. From Thessalonica, I got on an old coaling ship, it was. Been converted to troop carrier. And when I went down to get a bunk, well, there was no bunk, there were bunks, but they were all just had been welded to the side of the ship. And I mean, the top bunk was about 25-35 foot right in the top. And you had to climb up there if you were on the top bunk. I said, "There's no way I'm going up there." I said, if you get on the rough sea and get tipped out your bunk, you'll kill yourself coming down there. And that took me to Athens, and from there we got on a bigger ship from at Athens, and we set sail and we landed in the south of France. And I've still got these brochures that it give you a sort of a map. Each man got a map, and it told you where you were going to stop for a meal and what you were going to do. And we landed at Dieppe, and at Dieppe, it was fantastic the way it was organized.
Had you traveled across France from the south of France to Dieppe?
That's right, uh-huh, yeah. I've done everything about Greece, I think, and that. That was interesting because on the map you had a railway track, and then you had symbols of knife and fork. That's where you stop to have a meal. But anyway, we landed at Dieppe, and we went in there, and we got a one sleeve and cash and cigarettes and you know. In fact, I had men specially stand to push you, take you out of one queue and put you in or another one. You know, sign that, and I put it. They could make you sign over 21 years if they just put the papers down in front of you, because it was just. They did thousands of men in hours, and he went from there straight onto a ship and then back to England. And I finished off in York, and I was released from York, which was fantastic again. You were fed, and then you were taken into a massive barrack room filled with clothes, civilian clothes. You were measured by a tailor, and he more or less gave you a number. He said, "Well, if you go to so-and-so, you'll find clothes there that'll fit you." And there you pick a suit and an overcoat and things like that. And he finally sent home. I did 4 years. I went back to work. I went 4 years, and as I said before, I tried to join the army again. And a chap I worked with, he says, "Well, why don't you join the Territorial Army?" He says, "You have a little bit of home life and you've got your army life as well." And that's what I did. And I spent 16 years with the 8th Battalion down right there from me.
And what rank did you hold?
Well, I joined as a sergeant and I finished as a sergeant major. While I was there with the TA, I was, a man only ever sees this once in his life. That's the presenting of brand new colours to the regiment. And it was the 8th Battalion's turn to have new colours. They only get the ones every 100 years. And we had a competition, a drill competition, to see which company would escort the colours. And I won that again. Colonel Robertson was the colonel at the time. We had a drill competition in Bransworth. We trained the men, the sergeants and myself. But when it went on for the actual competition, we had nothing to do with it. We were taken out, and an officer took them, which went all right. Like, he wasn't as good as what the non-commissioned officers are in drilling. Anyway, we won this competition. We escorted the colours on the Palace Green. It was fantastic. Princess Alexandra came, our Colonel-in-Chief, and I was presented to her. My wife and myself were presented to her no less than 3 times at various occasions. From there, another highlight of that, we were sent to Milham on a civil defence course. And on the fact that I was doing civil defence at the Royal Honours Factory, I think it stood in stead for me because I got second in the brigade, second highest points for civil defence.
So you see the 8th Battalion right through almost to its demise.
Yes, I did.
68.
Well, I was awarded the Territorial Efficiency Medal for 12 years service, but I was with them 16. And then, I don't know if it was correct or not, but we got a Colonel Charland, took over Colonel Charland. And in my opinion, he was sent to smash the battalion up, which eventually happened. And I can't understand this. If I put this on record for whoever listened, that I can't understand the Ministry of Defence or whoever controls armies. We had a battalion, an 8th Battalion was a battalion of full-strength volunteers, not press men, volunteers. And all they had to do, in my opinion, was equip them with modern weapons and lay down stricter rules and regulations saying, right, you will do a fortnight's camp. And they could have relieved battalions in Germany that was, doing guards on the Berlin Wall and things like that. And that's all they needed to do. Equip them with modern weapons, put an age limit on a man in the 8th Battalion, because when you're 30 years old, you're too old to be an infantryman. And all right, leave 1 or 2 old men to bring the new ones on. But that's why they never did that, I don't know. And I don't like this new idea they've got of the light infantry being spread, one light infantry for the whole of the country. I don't like it at all.
Looking back on your wartime experience, who was the finest soldier you served with?
Pardon?
Who was the finest soldier you served with?
My company commander, Major Gray. As I say, he was a major, 21-year-old. I would have followed him anyway. Another one was Brigadier May. I think he's dead now. But he finished off as Brigadier. But he took over from Colonel Vaux. Remember in the story, Colonel Vaux, I think he got killed in an air crash. Paddy May, or Crackers May, they used to call him. He was the second in command. He took the battalion over. He was another good officer. And people like that, you could follow it anywhere.